As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Welcome to the Shamrock. Pete Sampson joined by Matt Fortuna atop LA Coliseum. Instead of being in the visiting coaches' booth tonight, we're actually where I think Chris Fowler and Kirk Herbstreit called the game tonight.
Someone else was doing a podcast. Yeah, Can you believe that? And they took our spot. It was a USC podcast. They took everything from Notre Dame tonight.
Unbelievable. Notre Dame falls 38-27 to USC. Matt, we've both covered games. I've covered more of them than you in the sense of like, you know when USC is more talented than Notre Dame. I didn't really feel that way other than obviously at the quarterback position. It was just a freak performance from Caleb Williams. I realize that he's been very good for the second half of the season, but I mean, what he did tonight with the escapability behind the line of scrimmage, there were moments where it felt like his scrambling ability was made Notre Dame's pass rush, which has been very good this season, into like a spring practice footwork drill. He was an NFL player playing in a college football game. He finished with 232 yards passing, 3 rushing touchdowns. I don't think he was touched on any of them, and 1 passing touchdown. His 35 yards rushing were comically underselling his impact on the game. I thought Notre Dame did a lot of good things tonight. It was not a game where I felt like Notre Dame needed to play perfectly to win, but they needed to play better than they did. And that, I think, really chafed Marcus Freeman post-game. His post-game interviews due to a real cluster on the field I did not attend. But I think he – not that this was like, hey, this is one that got away, but – if you're a head coach and you need to play an A game and you put a B minus C plus out there, when USC did play clean, they did play well. That has to sting a little bit, I think, if you're Notre Dame. Not that this was like there for the taking, but it was there for it to be a game in the fourth quarter more than it was.
You know, it's interesting. USC got out with interviews a lot later than Notre Dame did. And I was down for those. And I was, shooting the bull with some people with that program outside. And first thing they said, that's the best team we've played all year. And we thought that coming in, we thought that'd be the case. I don't know if like in real time, that would be my takeaway. 38-27. I think the gap's there. And I shouldn't say the gap's there right now. I thought it would be a stretch to call us a winnable game for Notre Dame because they would have had to do a lot of things they didn't do. But, as great as Caleb was, and he was, that was his second lowest passing output of the season next to a Washington State game where he had 188 yards. The stats don't really tell the story with Caleb Williams. I think they do tell him with Notre Dame. They ran for just 90 yards and they gave up 204 rushing yards to a USC team that's been without its top running back the last 2 weeks. That's alarming. Said all week, all season, USC, say what you want about their defense, they lead the nation in turnover margin, and sure enough, they win the turnover battle 2-0 tonight. That can't happen. So I don't know. I mean, I come out of this and Notre Dame, like, they fought. They played hard. They definitely didn't quit. I mean, they showed enough fight in the second half where I thought, they've got a chance here. But when it's all said and done, you look up, they lose by 11. I have no idea why they went for two on that last one. That didn't make sense for me from a math standpoint. But they lose by 11. And yet I can't help but think to myself, this is the worst USC team they will ever face under Lincoln Riley, and they're 11 points worse than them. And from a programmatic standpoint, that's a little alarming to me, because you don't get to make excuses if you're Marcus Freeman or Notre Dame football by talking about it's year one. I know Lincoln Riley's not a first-year head coach. He's been a head coach for 5 years before this. But this is his first year at USC, and he's on the brink of having the greatest single-season turnaround probably in college football history. And I don't think they're anywhere close to where they're going under him. And that's scary.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt that like USC is back-ish. You know, there, as I was walking off the field with Lincoln Riley, some fans shouted Pete Carroll who at him. And like USC is not at that level. I mean, those were terrifying USC teams. I mean, they had dudes everywhere. This USC team has some very good receivers, pretty good running back, and a transcendental talent at quarterback.
Who's coming back, by the way?
Yeah, really, it's bizarre that he has to play in college next year.
Him and Marvin Harrison Jr., I think, maybe be the top two picks in this year's draft if they're eligible.
Yeah, it's pretty wild to think about how Notre Dame has to defend him next year. But it's like, to get into Notre Dame's performance, there were so many things Notre Dame did tonight, even in the first half, where you'd be like, okay, if X happened, you would feel good. I think at halftime, USC had 222 yards. Drew Pine was 8 of 8. They limited the game's possessions, which was how Notre Dame wanted to play it. I mean, Notre Dame finished with, they averaged 7.8 yards per play. Like, I need to go back and check sort of the statistics on that for the course of the season, but that is a really, really high number for Notre Dame. It was higher, like USC finished at 7.1. So there were a lot of things Notre Dame did well enough to win tonight, but you cannot botch a quarterback running back exchange in the beginning of the second half, nor can you get stuffed on 3rd and 2 or 4th and run repeated. Like Notre Dame's path to winning was much more narrow than USC's was, because they don't have like a cheat code at quarterback. And to do that, you have to be incredibly efficient on the ground. You have to be like in control of the football. Like Drew Pine's interception at the end, like, is sort of like, whatever. You're pressing. You have to take some risks. The fumble, you can't have. The Mitchell Evans stuff, you can't have. Those are, to me, it's like, for how much better USC was at quarterback, so much of the story of tonight's game is USC being better in just a couple really big spots in the game, a couple really big snaps in the game. And mostly those were like USC's defense making a play,
right,
which they did not make many plays in the entire game. But Notre Dame's defense, on the flip side, did they make a play at all? They had 2 sacks in the first half.
Yeah, Foskey in the first half. I mean,
but that was it. I mean, they
were stretched thin. I will give them that. Yeah, I mean, they had to play five DBs.
Right. I mean, and the fact that, you know, USC did not punt other than when their quarterback did the punting. But I mean, Notre Dame got to halftime and it was 17-7, and then they were going to get the ball to start the second half, when you're playing without Cam Hart, which we knew, Tariq Bracey, which we didn't, you're starting Jaden Mickey, who's not, you know, ready for this kind of stage. Ben Morrison, who is, but you're also starting Xavier Watts. You're starting Rowan Henderson. Like, it's not a super talented secondary. It's not the one that Notre Dame thought it was going to go to battle with tonight, 2 weeks ago. So that, I think in some ways, like, Notre Dame had to kind of play this kind of like very soft prevent-y defense. Like, they played a lot of 3-3-5 formations tonight, which they haven't done all year. And I get why they did it, because they had to protect their secondary. But the flip side of that was you gave up 204 yards rushing to a good offense. Don't get me wrong, but like, Notre Dame they were not going to be able to win playing that style of defense. But I don't really know what other options they had. Like, because when you saw, there were a couple third downs where USC went at Jaden Mickey. They have him playing sort of bail coverage, where the receiver just runs hard up the field, gets past the six, turns around and comes back. The ball is right freaking there every time because Caleb Williams is throwing it. I thought that Notre Dame did a good job trying to paper over some cracks, but like, man, the cracks are the cracks. And there was no hiding from that by the time the game ended.
I thought Drew Pine played one of his better games. I thought he played the type of game, fumble notwithstanding, that Notre Dame needed to have a chance in this one. He completed his first 15 passes for, I think, 194 yards and two touchdowns. They took some shots downfield. He had some money throws, particularly, I think it was the Colsey touchdown catch. It felt like USC got off to such a hot start. And frankly, I think, you know, got a little too cute early on trying the Heisman moment with the pass to Caleb Williams that ends up being an offensive pass interference. Like, it should have been 14-0, and that changes, I just think, the feel of the game and of the stadium. But I thought Notre Dame had an answer for the first three quarters for everything USC did, for the most part, as far as responding to them scoring. But they needed more than just an answer tonight. They needed to make the defensive plays that USC ended up making and winning the turnover battle. They needed more than they got. I mean, they needed to be able to stop the run when they needed to, and they were not able to do that for the reasons you mentioned. But again, I keep coming back, like, Notre Dame's thin, but like, this is a program that should have some, like, if USC can figure it out in the 12th game of their first year with a new coach with an entirely new roster, I don't think Notre Dame has an excuse. I mean, the other part, and one thing, open air press box, probably is electric Notre Dame USC game at Notre Dame, at USC since the Carroll days, I would imagine.
No,
like,
doubt.
The stadium was rocking. It just feels like a bigger game. You hear the oohs and ahs every time Caleb Williams steps back. You hear the Heisman chants. Just a really cool, fun environment that I think is befitting this rivalry and that they've missed for obvious reasons the last decade or so. But I mean, Lincoln Riley, I mean, USC ran 61 plays a night. Now, how many of them went for 10 yards or more?
Ooh, I don't know. It's going to, you know, what?
24. Oh. 39% of USC snaps went for 10 yards or more.
It did feel like there were moments, and I think after the Pine fumble was one of them, where like
they got
Notre Dame and Al Golden on skates and were shoving them around. Yeah, overall, it's like it's kind of one of those game plans. It maybe it's like the flip of the Ohio State offensive game plan where like, I understood why Notre Dame tried it. It didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
I understood why Notre Dame tried the defense they tried tonight, but there's no way, in no world can Marcus Freeman look at that and be like, all right, that was the move. Because they never really took any chances, I felt like. Which, you know, to be fair, I think we're still talking about the double safety blitz at Ohio State. Like, when you take chances, you can get smoked. But there were they. Once you got into the second half, especially after the Pine turnover, like Notre Dame was never going to win the game without forcing a turnover.
Right.
And there was the one in the first half that I think Addison was clearly had recovered the ball. But that was it. Like there wasn't a moment like, and I guess that sort of is fitting of a quarterback who finished 18 of 22, like, I'd have to go back and look at his four incompletions, how many of them were throwaways. I know one was in the first half where he got clobbered trying to throw it. But, like, well, I guess, frankly, one, I don't know if – I guess it was an OPI, so it doesn't count as a incompletion by the receiver or the running back. But I don't know. I didn't feel like they got close to making USC make a big mistake. Like, there wasn't a batted ball. Like, you – there wasn't a play you could point to and be like, oh, if that one USC offensive play went differently, because I don't think that you can point to Caleb Williams escaping from Isaiah Foskey and Jason Adamolola and Howard Cross and right, like everybody.
Which one? The third and 20 or the one that went for 19?
The 20, I think
it's the one they ran
the second and 8 from midfield where he stepped, it was in the second quarter. Foskey was coming behind him, he stepped up. Adam Lowell was coming at his face. He stepped back and then stepped up. And, like, he kept his eyes downfield the whole time. It's just, like, I don't really know what the solution is for that if you're Notre Dame. But it just – there was never a moment where I felt like, ooh, they're getting Caleb Williams off schedule.
Right.
You know? He just felt like he was in command of the stadium, of USC, of Notre Dame. Like, of the whole scene, he was running the show.
He was. He really – I mean, you know, you mentioned that. I mean, he had the last two touchdowns, the second to last one – He makes one man miss and basically backpedals his way in from 5 yards because he's got so much space and he's just taunting Notre Dame's defense. The second one was on a 4th and 2 and the game was already out of reach and he just burst right up the middle for a 16-yard touchdown.
Yeah.
And then after the game, he's with the fans. He's with the band. Like he's a showman. Like he gets like there's a reason Caleb Williams and his father want to come to USC. There's a difference between being a first round pick and the number one pick. The same way there's a difference between being like a low 4-star recruit and a high 4-star recruit. Like Matt Leiner and Reggie Bush are still living off what they did at USC. And Caleb Williams in 1 year taking these guys from 4-8 to probably in the college football playoff and absolutely win the Heisman. I don't even know who would be runner up at this point. Maybe probably Max Duggan because no one's talked about him at
all.
Yeah,
your Heisman poll is going to be very, very short of drama on Monday.
Who's number two? I'm very curious. And I'll also be curious who gets in the playoff if TCU or USC loses next week because that's a whole nother. No bigger Notre Dame fans tonight than the good people of Columbus, Ohio. And Notre Dame, unfortunately, let them down in that regard. But did you see, by the way, this just came through. Colleague Chris Vanini sent this on Twitter. I think it's real. Caleb Williams, who's known for painting his fingernails, according to the AP's Mark Terrell, painted on his 8 non-thumb fingers. A 4-letter word that starts with F on one hand and NDXX on the other. Looks real. They're citing the AP.
Okay.
Makes for good podcast content. And we're talking about Caleb Williams.
I
mean, you just look at the, like, compare this place, what you were here in 18. And look, that was a big game for Notre Dame. They clinched a playoff berth with the win. But I mean, I can't imagine the environment was anything like
this one. It was more of a bowl game crowd. There was a good Notre Dame sort of crew here for that one. This felt like a legit trip to the Coliseum, a legit road game for Notre Dame, which like you haven't come here and felt like a hostile environment really since 06, definitely 02. But damn, that was a long ass time ago. I mean, it was funny before the game you saw Brian Cushing sort of on the sidelines and James Laurinaitis and Marcus Freeman go up to him. And it was like kind of like real recognized real. Like remember when we were 5-star linebackers back in the day playing in the All American game together. But
Taylor Mays, by the way, I saw on the field. He's a student assistant. Apparently. I did not know that.
I didn't know that either. I also saw him on the field.
I'm like, he doesn't look like a student. He looks like a guy who used to make a lot of big plays.
Yeah. That brought back memories of him in 06 chasing down Armando Allen, I think, or maybe it was 09. I can't remember. It all runs together.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
There was much more of a big game vibe to it. I know people talk about, hey, it's better for college football when Notre Dame is relevant, and it is. Like, I think the same thing holds true for USC. I mean,
I think it's
like,
that with every blue blood for the most part. But yes, I mean, especially for the sake purpose of this conversation, this rivalry, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, I think that this rivalry is going to hit a different, hopefully a different gear, because they have not been good at the same time for a very long time, other than just like bits and pieces. They are both good this year. I think they'll both be good next year. And they maybe just be good for a while now. But, if Notre Dame had won tonight, it would have been the first time they beat a ranked team in LA since 92. And it would have been the first time they had upset USC in this series since 2010. Which was like the Harrison Smith pick game at the end, Brian Kelly's first season. So it's been a minute since Notre Dame has won in this game when people thought it shouldn't. It's been even longer when they've beaten a good USC team here. But I mean, like we've kind of talked about already, they had they had their moments to do it. It's not like they needed to play a perfect game tonight. They just needed to play better than the one that they did.
No, they did. And, you know, as you talk about USC and Notre Dame being back good for college football, I mean, the pregame scene, did you go on the field?
Pre-game? I did, yeah.
I'll be hard-pressed to ever find something that compares, at least in a regular season, to the Ohio State-Notre Dame scene this year where LeBron James and everyone who's everyone is on the field. But it was similar enough, especially for, you know, a Notre Dame team that, you know, wasn't necessarily playing for anything as far as, you know, New Year's Six Bowl or a college football playoff berth. I mean, this was a three-loss Notre Dame team coming into this season or this game. And, you know, it was a big game environment. This was a big game for USC. Like, they had a lot to prove. They had, you know, Caleb Williams got his official probably Heisman stamp of approval. And USC, especially with Oregon losing, and they could still play Oregon next week, but it's firmly established itself as the team to be in the Pac-12. And with all the dominoes that fell elsewhere, is undoubtedly in the playoff with a win next week. I did think it was funny. They announced Texas A&M beating LSU on the stadium. And while on most nights that would make Notre Dame fans happy, it made USC fans explode with cheers because two-loss LSU somehow was ranked ahead of one-loss USC in this past week's college football playoff selection committee rankings. That's not going to matter anymore. But no, it was cool and it was refreshing to be in this building, this renovated building, which is a lot nicer than the last time I was here, and have a big game environment and have the fans like being stuck outside trying to get in at kickoff because there's so many and they're not used to it here. It was cool. It was fun. I mean, you're more of a recruit, Nick, than I am, but some of the names you saw on the sideline pregame from the high school ranks, not to mention, you know, you mentioned Brian Cushing walked them out of the tunnel today. Keyshawn Johnson was down there. Willie McGinnis.
Yep.
You know, it felt like Will I Am, who had sunglasses on and a hat, and I never would have. Well, they showed him on the scoreboard, and then they played I Got a Feeling.
Okay.
They also showed a guy dressed in a priest outfit that said Catholics for USC.
Yes, the finding a Pope outfit happening. Yeah, yeah. It just it's good for college football that this series is a big deal because, you know, how often have we gone through seasons the last few years where it's like it's Thanksgiving weekend. You got Michigan, Ohio State. You got Alabama, Auburn, and that's it. And then Notre Dame is, you know, when they're playing USC, it's still like it's important to Notre Dame, but it's not a game that really registers nationally. And tonight definitely did.
Felt like an appropriate. Like it's not Michigan, Ohio State. Nothing is Michigan, Ohio State this year. Where both are undefeated, but with that game at noon and this game at 7:30, it felt like an appropriate. I'd say undercard because it was the last event, but like an appropriate bookend to just a crazy day of college football and college football upsets and rivalry games and narratives getting flipped. And so in that regard, it was fun to see and be a part of. And you know, I'm looking forward to seeing how this changes and progresses for both programs under first-year head coaches in the next couple of years. I mean, I'm writing this for tomorrow, but a year ago tomorrow, USC is playing their last home game, losing to BYU, and Lincoln Riley's in the middle of Bedlam. They lose and he's hired a day later. And it's just crazy to think like how quickly that has happened. And even Lincoln Riley spoke a little bit about this, you know, after the game tonight, as far as, you know, did I say we're going to be 11-1? Like, I don't want to put limits on what we're doing, but I knew what we were capable of. And here we are. It's just remarkable to see. And, you know, not everywhere has the advantages that USC does as far as recruiting and geography and history. But it definitely, you know, for better or worse, gives hope and probably quicker triggers ADs around the country wondering when their coaches are going to turn their programs around. Because what he's done here has been as good as you could possibly hope for in year one if you're a USC fan.
Yeah, there was a moment after the game where Jack Swarbrick is down on the field talking to Mike Bone. And I was just like, I hope he's asking him, like, how does this transfer portal work? Like, how can Notre Dame take better advantage of this? Because two of the biggest moments of the season, like at least in terms of what they should be informative for Notre Dame, were Marshall and tonight. And Marshall had 20 transfers, I believe. USC had more than 20 transfers, including basically their entire offensive skill positions, including a guy that was at Stanford. So it's not – they're not just sort of like picking guys out from everywhere. This Notre Dame – I don't want to make this a referendum on everything, because it's not like Notre Dame could go into the portal and find Caleb Williams.
He almost went to Wisconsin.
Yeah, but they are going to have to be more aggressive in this moving forward. Like if Marcus Freeman, like when Marcus Freeman talks about, you know, you got to find ways to enhance everything, he's got to go to Jack Swarbrick and say, look, we have to enhance in the portal. We don't need to have an entire team made of guys from the portal. And I think even Freeman's message to the team last night was basically that USC is, you know, more of a hired gun program, and you have a culture that you built over 3, 4, 5, 6 years for some. That doesn't need to change because you take 3 or 4 transfers. That should not threaten that culture. But I do think Notre Dame as an institution needs to sort of get on board with the portal now and say, look, if there's a way we can enhance our roster, let's figure out a way to do it and make this a little bit easier for our football program than we're currently making it. Again, like, would that have changed tonight? Probably not. But I think for Notre Dame to sort of work around the edges, like, there's still going to be a developmental high school recruiting program. That's fine. That's how it should be for Notre Dame. But there's got to be more Brandon Josephs out there. There had to be a quarterback last year that they could have got. So some of that is figuring out who to go after and going after them. And some of that is the university sort of being a little bit more in lockstep with the realities of college football in 2022, as it's almost 2023.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, it's just, USC is proof right now that it can be done, and that can be done quickly. And you're seeing, you know, to a lesser extent, you're seeing some other programs around the country getting better quicker, because it's in some ways it's easier as a new coach to take over and not start from scratch. I mean, Lane Kiffin has become the portal king, the self-titled portal king, but like, he got Ole Miss until the last 3 weeks, a pretty damn good team this year that no one saw coming because he recruited the portal extremely well. But that's got to be that, and NIL, which is another podcast ran for another day, has got to be like a priority for Notre Dame. I just, when you see it on the field the way you did tonight, even like, to your point with Marshall, which you wouldn't think about like as a learning lesson.
But I know that resonated with like people in positions of influence around Notre Dame. There was like, whoa, they have how many transfers? Like, what are we doing here? There's got to be an examination of, and look, if Notre Dame at the end of the day is like, we just can't do it, then like, let's not pretend that you're like all in with it, right? Like, that's there's got to be steps you can take to get more out of an avenue that is right there for you in college football right now. And that, you know, that wasn't that way 5 years ago or 10 years ago, but there's just got to be more that Notre Dame can do there. But they got to have a conversations that people above Marcus Freeman's pay grade about, like, how do you get that done?
Yeah, I mean, and it's, you know, setting aside and I don't mean to say this as it's insignificant, I just say it because I'm not in those meetings, but like, setting aside the red tape and the admissions stuff and credit transfers that go behind the scenes as far as admitting a transfer.
Yeah.
It should be like on its own, on name brand, on institutional rep. Notre Dame should be the king of transfers. Like, you miss out on a 4 or 5 star who was going for the bells and whistles elsewhere, and he's turns 21 and says, you know what, I actually want a really good degree and to play high level football. Like, there are more players in college football right now than not who I think feel that way, and who I don't even want to say make that mistake, because everyone transfers. I don't think it's a mistake to commit wherever you commit as an 18-year-old. But like, I just, you know, Jerry Tillery, right? Baton Rouge kid who like grew up in the shadow of LSU and says, I want, you know, to some extent, I want to be president of the United States one day. I'm only going to do that if I go to a place like Notre Dame. Like, you can't tell me there aren't a lot of people who can play really good football who have that same kind of mentality that Notre Dame and only Notre Dame can target.
And that, like, would be, you know, and again, not to get into NIL stuff, but like, that kind of player is somebody that brands would want to associate with.
Yes.
You know, that's, I realize Caleb Williams has like a million NIL deals happening right now. But like, Notre Dame should be very, very marketable in like modern college football. There's no, the changes to this sport should not automatically be hindrances to Notre Dame. They should be places where you can find new solutions. And I have no doubt that Marcus Freeman will push for that. I think that he has built up enough credibility in year one to have earned the right to push for that. So it would be, what do you think Freeman took out of tonight that would be instructive for him moving forward? Cause that's like, you know, I don't want to make everything a big picture all the time because I already do it too much, but like, if you're Marcus Freeman, aside from, you know, so the transfer stuff, like I think certainly come away, like you got to have a playmaker, a quarterback, not a game manager. I don't know. Was there anything else that you would come away from tonight being like, hey, we got to play it this way? Cause I mean, as we watched earlier today from our hotel, like you can play explosive smash mouth football. Michigan does it. Notre Dame has done it in spots this season. There's no reason Notre Dame can't have a powerful running game that like kicks the crap out of people, but also a quarterback who's more of a threat that has to be respected in the pass game.
Yeah, I mean, I think Michigan is just proof of concept, right? And I think, you know, 12 hours ago, we may not have been saying that because no one, at least I didn't think Michigan was going to win today. And when Blake Corum went down, I definitely didn't think they were going to win today. And they ended up just literally shooting Ohio State into another universe. And now that program's having an identity crisis of itself, even though they might actually backdoor their way into the playoff if things break the right way for them. But, you know, I like the identity they were going for, and I liked it at its peak, as we saw during the Clemson game. And I thought it was, you know, as we closed the book on year one of the Marcus Freeman era, you know, I don't think you can oversell or overestimate just how important it was for him to not just lose the locker room and the coaching staff after the Stanford game, but to get them to be playing their best ball down the stretch entering this game. Now, it didn't work out for them tonight. I think they had 19 straight November wins. That streak is snapped. It was the longest in the country.
It's a weekend for those streaks. Like Clemson's home win streak was the longest in the country.
Michigan winning in Columbus.
Yep.
Brian Kelly again eliminated from the college football playoff. Notre Dame averaged 215.8 rushing yards per game during their five-game winning streak and had just 90 a night against a defense that all of us were calling into question tonight. Yep. And I don't know how that – I don't pretend to be a play caller or an offense coordinator or to know everything that goes into it. I imagine when Drew Pine's dealing the way he is tonight, like that's going to take something away from your commitment to the run and from your offensive lines kind of bulldozing like play when they have the game they did against Clemson and Pines only throwing for 80 yards. But, you know, they need to be more complete and well-rounded in a game like this. And defensively, again, I know they were stretched thin. I know they had to play formations that they had not really had to tap into before. But I expected more from them, at least on the ground. I did not expect Austin Jones to have the kind of game he did for USC. That's 2 weeks in a row now. You know, Travis Dye was their go-to back all year long. He's on crutches now. He's not playing. And USC really leaned into that. I mean, if I told you before the game, USC's leading receiver would have four catches and their leading receiving yards guy would have 45 yards. I mean, that's a win. Caleb Williams, 232 passing yards. That's a win.
There were a lot of stats that felt like they were wins for Notre Dame tonight.
Okay, I mean, they had more yards per play than USC tonight.
Three, as many incompletions as touchdown passes for Drew Pine.
That's insane.
That's a win.
Yeah.
There are wins to be found all over. And that's why I sort of get back to like, we had the NIL talk and the transfer talk, but like, really, it's just like Mitchell Evans, pick up the first down. Drew Pine, don't fumble a ball. Like
that was such, I'd say an omen. When they don't get that first down early on, I'm thinking,
yeah,
this could be a long night. And it wasn't to their credit, but I just thought, these are the spots, the situational spots where you need to be clearly the better team than USC,
especially
to have a chance to win
in the trenches.
Yes.
You know, a place where you are better.
It came after third and two as well.
Yeah.
Which I think was a called pass, if I recall correctly, and Pine ended up going forward
and was short. That was like watching the replay of that. I marked it down as like, this is significant. And then he picked up the first down only to get it reviewed. Because like, I believe Logan Diggs was uncovered in the flat to his left, and he did not see him. That's part of the game where I think Pine struggles quite a bit seeing running backs out of the backfield, even though he hit Audric Estime for a 30 yarder in the first half. Like there's, you know, for how much crap Tommy Rees takes, and I understand some of it, Like, there are solutions all over the field for Notre Dame. There were solutions all over the field for Notre Dame offensively tonight that they did not capitalize on. I don't think that there was a ton of stuff where I was just like, wow, USC either whipped him or got him in a great call. Like, there were some moments where they did. But, I mean, when Drew Pine throws for a career high and has as many incompletions as touchdown passes, like, to me, that says Reese got a ton out of Pine tonight, and I would give him some of the credit for that performance. In addition, obviously, Pine himself. You know, it's like, I think at halftime, people were ready to like be like, all right, that's it. I can't watch anymore. But like, I thought that Reese actually did a pretty good job of getting Pine in a good state of mind when there were moments tonight where I felt like the game could have slipped away from Notre Dame.
Oh, there were a lot of moments.
And it never did. Totally did. So yeah, I would give Drew Pine quite a bit of credit for like kind of almost maximizing what he is tonight. He's really going to want that fumble back. That's probably going to stick with him for a long time, which like you don't see players just like crumpled to the turf like in kind of anguish the way he did after that fumble. That one just really, really hurt.
The other one that stands out to me, USC dominating time of possession, 35-24. Yeah. Did not see that coming tonight.
No.
And I know, you know, part of it's tailored to the style of the game. And but again, it felt like USC scored really quickly every time they had the ball for the most part. But I did appreciate your can't block a punt if you don't actually line up to do a punt. Caleb Williams, who made the joke afterward, I had the longest punt of the season, coach. Yeah. I'm game to do it again. That one came, by the way, everyone's talking about the 19-yard run he had in the third quarter. The second quarter run before that set up that punt, it was 3rd and 20. It wasn't a run. And he just, I want to know how many air yards he threw it, but he threw a pass to, I think it was Mario Williams. And Mario Williams was signaling first down because he caught it near the initial first down marker. Yeah. It was a 12-yard catch when they needed 20.
But Williams
threw it so far away because he scrambled so much that
I think
in real time you thought, oh, yeah.
I think based on Twitter, Fowler actually announced it as a first down, which I, like, to be totally honest, I thought it was a first down just because the pass went so far. Like,
well, and he signaled. It was Mario Williams. Okay. Yeah, it was Mario Williams. And, yeah, he signaled first down.
Okay, yeah. That was... There was just some nonsensical stuff. I'm not saying that you can't defend it if you're Notre Dame, but like
Caleb felt like he was playing with them a little. Like, you're obviously not going to do that in the NFL or in a playoff game, but there were some times where I'm just like, all right, like we get it, dude. You can spin. They're not going to get you. Like, just get rid of the ball.
There was a lot of that. I don't, you know, for how much Freeman talked about Caleb Williams' tackle breaking ability during the week. Al Golden talked a little bit about it on Tuesday night when I asked. That's got to be like, as much as you want to like tip your cap to Caleb Williams, that's got to be something if you're Notre Dame, be like, how the hell did we let that happen? It's not like he's Cam Newton back there.
He was nice.
He's 6'1", 215.
Yeah, no, he's not as big as him, but he's definitely quicker.
Yeah, no, elusive. I mean, he's a hell of a player. Just like, I think Notre Dame's pass rush, they had a good plan that they didn't come through with. And I don't really know what the plan is for like, all right, this guy's just going to spin out of 87 tackles. There were, you know, Marcus Freeman talked about, you could really sense his frustration, I guess, in the audio recording, since I didn't make it to his presser due to USC's curious field management post game. But neither here nor there. You could sense that Freeman was frustrated by Notre Dame having a plan, installing the plan, and then not executing the plan. I don't think there was anything Caleb Williams said. While it was spectacular to behold, I don't think he did anything that surprised Marcus Freeman or Notre Dame.
Tui Piloto came out post game for USC. He got asked a question, you know, about, you know, what do you think every time Caleb does this? And he goes, yeah, I'm not surprised anymore. Like, he that's what he does.
Yeah.
And I said, well, how happy are you? You don't have to face him like the other defenses do. And he goes, I do every day in practice. And someone followed up, well, do you bring him down practice? And he just smiled and said, I try to. So that's everybody, I guess. Yeah. Not just a Notre Dame problem, but it was certainly on display tonight. And, you know, that's going to be a problem for Notre Dame next year. It's going to be a problem for everyone next year, unless this guy... If anyone could figure out a way to bypass,
can you write a should Caleb Williams opt out of his junior season column, or at least the month of October?
Enough money too, yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah, if he can afford to do it, I guess that makes sense. But Notre Dame. They finish up 8-4. Their bowl outlook is down.
Holiday was here tonight.
Holiday spoke was here. Them. That's good. Gator, Cheez-It, Holiday,
Chick-fil-A was here, but not for them.
Yeah, but not for them. Basically, the way it comes down to Notre Dame, if you're trying to figure this out, as I have been trying to figure out for a long time.
Yeah, Clemson and North Carolina just completely
they really us even more. Screwed us on that. But the Cheez-It Bowl has first pick. The Gator Bowl has second pick. The Holiday Bowl has third pick. Notre Dame is sort of in the same group with North Carolina and Florida State because they're one win
within them.
I expected North Carolina to be outside of that threshold, but they... lost NC State. So I'm not, now it's a matter of like, where are the heads of these bowls at? I will believe that a bowl will bypass Notre Dame when I see it. I have not seen it. I know our boss Stu Mandel has heard some things that has led him to believe that both the Cheez-It and Gator like Florida State and North Carolina because they're more local and they're not available. They're both having up seasons.
Florida State, I can see. I have a hard time seeing North Carolina.
But, yeah, it feels to me that the Cheez-It would – my hunch today would be the Cheez-It Bowl would take Florida State, the Gator Bowl would take Notre Dame, and the Holiday Bowl would take North Carolina. You can hold me to that in about 8 days when we find all this out. But if Notre Dame goes to the Gator Bowl, they'll be playing an SEC team. I don't think it. I mean, it's not going to be LSU, but kind of a South Carolina type of matchup, which
hey, that's not bad.
Yeah, which is compelling.
Two teams that beat Clemson this year.
Yeah, exactly. They can compare notes on that. So that's sort
two
of
two best special teams coordinators in the country.
Yeah, they were
Pete Lembo and Royals Brian Mason.
Watch list people. So yeah, there's a lot. You know, Drew Pine referenced it. There's a bunch for Notre Dame to play for. I realize sometimes that can be taken as like empty rhetoric, but for a coach in his first year, who's trying to like get the culture in a good spot, like the bowl will be an interesting test for Notre Dame because that was, I got to give Brian Kelly credit because I picked Iowa State a few years ago, but like Notre Dame showed up for that stuff. Like they were never the team that like didn't give a crap. If they got beat in a bowl game, it's because they got beat by a better team. Right. So, now Freeman gets to sort of have that challenge of how do you wire a college team to come back from a loss like this and deliver in a bowl game. I would think that they will do a good job of that. And then Freeman's going to have some decisions to make with recruiting and all that, that will be very fascinated to watch in the coming weeks.
I realized that, well, there is Michael Mayer, but aside from Mayer, there aren't a whole lot of Kyle Hamiltons on this team. How many guys do you think actually play in a bowl game?
It's like,
and I will preface this, but I want to say, like, if half the roster says we're done, God bless them. Like, begrudge anyone. No. Nor do I look at this as an indictment on anything.
No.
With the culture of the coaching, if people opt out, it's just the way of the world in 2022.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, Mayer for sure. If
Joseph,
Hart's out, he's in a sling, so I wouldn't expect him back. It's like, I think Isaiah Foskey, my understanding is like he would like to play in the game, but like I don't know if it's a great business decision to do it. We'll see. I think that there's probably a lot to get sorted out. I would think that making a decision in the raw aftermath of this is probably not a great approach to that. But that will be sort of an interesting. Like the bowl game means a hell of a lot less than it did 10 years ago because it's no longer like the capstone for your season. It's sort of like this one-off exhibition that falls between the current season and the next season. So it's kind of hard to look at that, but like if you're Deion Colsey, if you're Audric Estime, Logan Diggs, like there's a lot of younger talent on this team at these skill positions that, heck, if you're Mitchell Evans or Holden Stays, and Michael Mayer's not going to be there, like you have an opportunity to sort of put a claim down on that job for next year. So I'll be interested to sort of see how that shakes out. But we'll know Notre Dame's bowl destination pretty much Sunday afternoon, I think, of next week after championship weekend. That's when that stuff comes out. So I don't know if you have any final thoughts for our final post-game podcast in person here, but...
Because when we did this last year, everything we thought we knew about everything, Notre Dame, USC, Oregon, where I was that day, like everything just completely blew up overnight.
Yeah. Hopefully this podcast has a longer shelf life.
Hopefully we're not doing one every night this week like we did every night this week last year.
Yeah.
Well, that was great for business. What do you, 8 days from now, what do you think is different about Notre Dame football? Recruiting-wise with them, I'm assuming Marcus is going to stay out here. Some of them are going to stay out here.
I'm sure that
the way they usually do. I don't think any staff changes would happen this quickly unless someone gets hired elsewhere.
Yeah.
I mean, 8 days is an eternity, especially in a college football offseason.
Yeah, and it's like even their recruiting class, they're, you know, they got Kenny Minchie, the four-star quarterback, the other week. The guy, they're really sort of like working around the margins now. Like, can you add a skill position guy here, a receiver there, maybe a combo DB skill position guy? So it's, I don't think a lot's going to change. I think that Freeman will probably take his time on this to figure out, all right, where were we? What needs to get better? What can get better through talent? What can get better through roster acquisitions? What can get better through coaching? I think that he'll probably take his time with this. And I am interested to sort of see what resources he calls in on it. I think we both know that he has leaned pretty heavily on Jack Swarbrick to date. Is this more of a trestle call? Are there other, you know, he's close with Mike Vrabel. Like who's he sort of calling about, like, hey, you know, I got to push my program in direction X, you know, do I need to tinker with some things? So I think that's probably not a rash decision he needs to make. And I guess I would think that the season had enough of like an eye of the beholder vibe to it that he probably would want to think it through opposed to like coming to a decision like right now.
Fryan Day leaves for the NFL. Is Marcus Freeman coaching on the Ohio State sidelines next year?
Good God, Matt.
How'd end on that note?
No, but Luke Fickell might be. So that's a whole nother.
They might make the playoff if USC or TCU loses. As crazy as that sounds. Warren was already politicking for them after
the game. Look, we all covered a program last year where the head coach thought the team should have been in the playoff and then took another job before waiting around to find out if they made it. So,
baseball, they waited till they made the playoff and then he left after.
Yeah, good time. So on that note, we'll wrap it up from the top of the LA Coliseum. It was a wild performance. Caleb Williams.
You're looking at the final score right now, aren't you?
The Heisman hype. I get it. USC 38, Notre Dame 27. There's a lot to pick apart here. I'm really going to, I don't know if I'd say I enjoy rewatching this game tomorrow, but I'm very interested to rewatch this game tomorrow because it was just, there were so many moments where Notre Dame was a play here, a play there, from really putting some serious game pressure on USC, couldn't get it done. And ultimately that led to some of, Marcus Freeman's frustration walking on the field. But Notre Dame finishes the regular season 8-4. They'll figure out their bowl next week. Matt and I will be there to talk about it, write about it, podcast about it, all those good stuff. So thanks for being with us this season on the Shamrock.
Shout out to our Manhattan Beach friends we made last night, listeners. Great, surprisingly huge turnout. In this part of the country.
That was fun. A lot of Shamrock listeners out here on the West Coast. So we appreciate you, as we do our listeners all over the country. So on that note, he's Matt. I'm Pete. Thanks for being with us on the latest episode of the Shamrock.